What's up, guys? You've just tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. Yeah! What a beautiful, blessed day! What's up, guys? I'm your host, Davey, and this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibrations. And what in the world do we mean by that? Well, we're about to tell you. What's up, guys? This is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. We have dedicated our lives to the very purpose of showing you different ways to perceive this human experience. And if it works for you, awesome. If it doesn't, even more awesome, because you found out something that does work. But we're here simply as catalysts for the energy of creation. We are here as catalysts to remind you of your true potential, to remind you of what you are truly capable of achieving, of creating for yourself. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome an extremely special guest onto the show today, someone that is extremely dear to my heart, a brother of mine, and also just an extremely wise person, just all around. Welcome my brother Colin.
Hey, what's good, everyone?
What's good? What's good? My brother Colin, I love you. I love you, baby. I get really excited when I get to spend time with Colin. He is such... Actually, you know what, guys? If you've been avid Vibration Station listeners, then you remember Colin. You know, before we were Dave's Good Vibration Station, the name of the show was Teen Trends with Dave and Friends. That's when we first started here at LA Talk Radio. Oh, about 8 years ago. And it looks like if you guys have been listening to us since we got on the air 8 years ago, then you would know Colin. Colin actually was my first co-host for Teen Trends with Dave and Friends.
And back in the day.
Back in the day, dude. Long, long eons ago is what it feels like. But we are here back in the studio, upgraded, Dave's Vibration Station, brother Colin running hot. So a lot has happened. A lot has transpired since Colin has last been on the show. And I'm actually extremely honored to have Colin on the show today because of everything that he's experienced in the last 8 years, everything I've experienced in the last 8 years. And then when we come together, and then when we... That sounds wrong. When we mash our heads together, that sounds wrong too. When we bring our heads together and we like start just talking about investment and finance and the world and the global fiscal state of the global economy, all this stuff, we just feed off of each other's energy so well. So I asked Colin if he would be open to coming back on the show and sharing some of his profound knowledge when it comes to just investment strategies. Also, the monetary history. Colin and I are going to be talking about that. So if you guys are looking for a show that is going to completely warp your understanding of our currency system, make sure to stay tuned in today. So I'd actually like to give a quick little warm second introduction and just say, Colin, it is so nice to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. Let's get talking.
In the studio. Oh, oh, we're going to get talking. Yeah, man. So when you were last on the show, we didn't really understand the currency systems. We didn't really study monetary history. We didn't really, we weren't focused on that. We were focused on getting through high school. We were focused on just like passing school and enjoying life.
Chilling hard.
And chilling super hard. And of course, spreading high vibrational wisdom to those that seek it. But now that we've grown up, we have studied certain things and, you know, really empowered ourselves with certain knowledge regarding our fiscal state. So, without further ado, once again, I would like to just tell you guys a little bit about what today's show is going to be on. So, we're going to be talking about the monetary system of not only the United States, but the entire world. We're going to be talking about certain investment strategies of how to protect your wealth, how to position yourself in certain assets that will indefinitely protect you from any type of currency crisis that we might see coming within the next few years. We're also going to be talking about something that's really interesting that Colin introduced me to, cryptocurrency. We're going to be talking about Bitcoins. Colin was actually telling me about this other cryptocurrency that he just got involved in. What's the name of that?
Ethereum.
Ethereum.
Or ETH if you're buying.
Right, right. It's not called a ticker symbol. That would be on the NASDAQ. That would be.
No, it's a shortcut. But I think once it goes on the ticker,
yeah,
like it'll be that. So.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So then we're also going to get into that, which is super crazy. The potential for Bitcoins to go public on the NASDAQ or ETF, actually, it would be as an exchange trade fund. So let's get into the show. Colin, I'm going to share with you some information that I have studied, and then I want you to tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
I want you to just shoot the shit, you know, just share with me your ideas. Okay. So... recently in the last couple of years of my life, I've really, I've found a passion for, understanding our global monetary system. When I started to do a little research, I was stunned. I found out that our currency, the US dollar, is printed by the Federal Reserve. We all know this. So the Federal Reserve prints this money, but who tells the Federal Reserve to print this money? Well, there's bonds and there's auctions for these bonds. So bankers, they will go to these big auctions and they will auction off. They'll say $500 billion auction, $600 billion auction. And then whichever bank auctions that bond, they then have this piece of paper which says, I have access to, or I am able to tell the Federal Reserve to print $500 billion and flood this into the economy. So that's basically how we print money. But here's the basis of it. The Federal Reserve has stockholders, has shareholders. The Federal Reserve is actually a publicly traded organization.
Is it a company, kind of?
It is.
Okay.
It literally operates as a company, just like the United States of America operates as a company. And guess what the United States of America number one product is?
Oil?
They're people.
People.
People. People is their greatest product. So
what about people are they selling?
Well, here's the thing. We are the product of consumption. So without the people, there would be no engine to continue the consumption, right? So basically, people act as the catalyst for profit. Without the people, without shoving these lies in our faces and saying, you need to have this to feel better, you need to take this medication to feel normal, whatever, so on and so forth, you need this cream, you need this, you need to get your butthole dyed, whatever the fuck it is. You know, all, you need to have this kind of hairstyle, whatever it is. It's all about consumer. It's consumer based. So Federal Reserve has shareholders which receive 6% annual dividends. So it basically operates, as Colin just said, like a company. So then this money is printed and it's flooded into our economy. It's flooded into certain big businesses. It's flooded into certain central banks. So it's all these things. And then through that, it trickles down into the pockets of, you know, the people. So here's where it gets twisted, though. if the Federer was okay, we have not been on a gold standard since 1971. We were taken off the gold standard since 1971. Most people still think that our currency is backed by something of intrinsic value, when in actuality, our currency is not backed by anything. Not by anything. Since 1971, we were taken off the gold standard. And even before that, we were only backed. It was like an 80% backing, and then it went to a 50% backing, then it went to a 30% backing, and then once we got off the Bretton Woods system, it was completely just total paper fiat currency. Now, what is a fiat currency? A fiat currency is a currency system that is not backed by anything of intrinsic value. A fiat currency is a currency system which is only supported by the people's faith in that currency, meaning that the dollar or the $100 bill that you have in your hand, the only reason why you can still go to the grocery store and trade that $100 for food or whatever it is that you want, a couple thousand dollars for a car, whatever the fuck, you couple hundred grand for a house, whatever it is, the only reason why you're capable of doing that is because there is a mutual agreement of the people's faith in that currency. People have faith that, okay, you're going to give me $100,000, I'm going to take this, I'm going to be able to buy my own shit with $100,000. But here's the flaw in the system, is that currency is actually not backed by anything of intrinsic value. It's not backed by gold. It's not backed by a cryptocurrency. It's not backed by anything. It's not backed by reserves of the land. Gaddafi, the African president, he actually wanted to back the African currency by the land's... minerals. He wanted to back the currency by the minerals and the how's this words
like gems, kind of.
Okay. So everything. So you know how Africa is an extremely rich place, like the minerals and the like oil minerals, like gold, silver, gems. Like Africa's rich with it. So he wanted. Muammar Gaddafi wanted to actually back the African currency with the country's natural reserves. That's what it was.
So would you be able to... So if I went to, for example, if I had $100 in whatever currency they have,
right?
Would I be able to go trade and be like, I want a little bit of ruby and I want a little bit of like whatever?
So I have no idea because he was... They put a stop to that shit before. But that was essentially the idea was they would...
Wait, why is it a bad idea, though? Why'd they put a stop to it?
Because Africa would be one of the wealthiest countries in the world if they did that.
Okay.
And if Africa became one of the wealthiest countries in the world because their currency was backed by the land's natural reserves, well, what would that do to the U.S.? It would throw us in the back seat. So people put a stop to it, and they said, the elitists, whatever, the dudes in charge. They said, nope, you ain't going to do that. Well, that's what we should be doing, because that way we can actually guarantee that our currency will always have intrinsic value. So I'm going to wrap this up real quick so we can get straight to Colin. Long story short, what are your thoughts on this, Colin? The currency is not backed by anything. Every time that we print more currency, it inflates the purchasing power of whatever currency that is, which actually devalues the currency itself, meaning the more money that's printed, the more money it takes to buy the same amount of stuff. That's why 20 years ago, you could go to a movie and a dinner for like $30. 50 years ago, you could go to a movie and a dinner for $5. Today, you can't go to a movie and a dinner without $50. It ain't gonna happen. Right, a movie ticket for one is like $22. A movie ticket for two is like over $40. And you want to grab dinner? No, it's like closer to $70 for dinner and a movie. So that is devaluation. That is currency devaluation. That is proof in the pudding that our government is printing currency that is not backed by anything of intrinsic value, which therefore is decreasing the purchasing power of that currency.
And also our wages aren't really increasing as much as that value is getting lost.
So true. The wages are actually, if we were to break down the math, we would actually be making less today if the minimum wage was, what is it, $10 an hour?
Yeah, it's about that.
Something like $10 an hour. So we would actually be making less at $10 an hour when our country is $19.8 trillion in debt. We're making less money at $10 an hour than we were when the minimum wage was $5 an hour. And our currency could buy more with that $5, if that makes sense. So it's not like the minimum wage is not going up, and it's not like you're making more money. It's not like a good thing that the minimum wage is going up. What that means is there's inflation occurring. What that means is the purchasing power of the dollar is dropping because it takes more dollars to purchase the exact same thing. They're saying, guess what? The currency is inflating, so your time is now worth $10 as opposed to $5.
When it should be more like 20.
Exactly. Exactly. When $5, when whatever, 10 years ago, when it was $5, the equivalent to that $5 today would be like $20, right? So that's how they're silently stealing the wealth from the lower and middle class.
Well, for example, like in Las Vegas, the minimum wage is about $8.50 without insurance, and it's $7.50 with insurance.
Interesting.
But for example, a 2-bedroom house here you could maybe get for $1,600. Maybe not house, 2-bedroom apartment, $1,600. I would say
in Vegas or Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Right. In Vegas, it's more like $750 to $900 for a 2-bedroom,
right.
Like in a nice area too. Here, nice area. $2,000 easy, like yeah,
like there's like probably $2,400 or $2,200. So, okay, that actually brings up another great facet of this. If the U.S. dollar is standard throughout, obviously, the United States, I understand property values. I understand, you know, some states are more sought after than others. That's why certain property values are lower or higher than others.
But well, it's also the job market, for sure. It's
so, yeah. So tell me, okay, so the job market. So is there more jobs in Vegas or like what?
No, there's less jobs than in Los Angeles. That's why it is less expensive there because
right.
The job market there is less than here.
Okay.
Okay. So for example, in San Francisco,
right.
I was looking at jobs and doing some research just because I kind of want to move to the Bay Area.
Beautiful.
A library assistant job, for example. You don't even need a college education or anything. You could just go in with a high school education and some experience.
Nice.
$3,500 a month.
And that's in Vegas.
That's in the Bay Area.
Right.
But the rent there, that's even worse than here. $2,300 would get you a one-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
But that's two-thirds of your entire wage.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's like so paycheck to paycheck.
So that's why the job market is so much better there. But in retrospect, you'd be making less than if you were in Vegas because of you have to live.
Right, right. That's, you know, that's really, really interesting the way just to think of. I mean, it trips me out to really think about how.
I mean, you also pay for weather. Like we in Los Angeles, we have the best weather in the world. So,
okay. So go. How do you pay for weather? Like
you pay for good weather.
Right,
if you're living in a place with a bunch of seasons where it gets negative 20 degrees, you're going to be paying less than where it only drops to maybe 40 degrees.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, that makes absolutely perfect sense.
And you also pay for the ocean.
Right. Of course.
That's why the middle of the country is a lot cheaper than here.
Right.
Most of the most expensive places are right in the ocean. San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, Miami. All those places are right in the ocean.
Right. So that's really interesting to think about how location, weather, like accessibility, all of these things are affecting price while simultaneously our government is printing this currency, which is inflating that. It's just, it's like this big geometry, if it makes sense, right? I'm going to play, it's actually just a 6-minute video. We're probably not going to listen to the whole 6 minutes, but this is Mike Maloney just kind of giving a brief summary of what Colin and I are talking about today. So in this video, we actually discuss the tsunami, the debt tsunami that is upon us and set to, quote unquote, drown the economy. So we're not going to listen to the whole 6 minutes, but here's just a little taste of what Colin and I are talking about today. And if you guys want to check some of this stuff out on your own, you can go on YouTube and just search Mike Maloney. That's M-I-K-E, last name M-A-L-O-N-E-Y. He's an extremely wise and educated economist, investor. He's a really cool guy. So check this out. Just brief summary of what we're talking about here.
Hi, this is Mike Maloney. And a few weeks ago, I did a video about the law that mandates a stock market crash. And I got a lot of flack from people on that in the comments. Some people saying it was untrue and misleading. Another one saying that you could actually repurchase the assets that you have to sell in your IRA through a 1031 exchange in your private brokerage account. Those things may be true, but it doesn't matter. This is still a law that says that more people have to sell stocks than buy stocks because the people that are invested in the stock market in their IRAs don't have a big passive income each month in their retirement. So when they sell, they're most of them, the vast, vast majority, are going to be living off of the proceeds, and they have to pay taxes on those proceeds. So even
we're gonna skip forward a little bit, guys. I know there's a lot of information.
You can see this huge bump in the population.
All right, this is where we're just gonna go straight to this.
Moves
so
through the population, we start getting this boom in the stock market.
Here we go.
So hi, this is Mike Malone.
Colin and I today. The basis of the show is investments. The basis of the show is bringing awareness to the masses of how our government is silently siphoning the purchasing power from the upper or from the lower and middle class into the pockets of the very few elitists. And how do they do that is through literally creating the system of inflation, which creates the loss of the purchasing power. And then once they've literally silently stolen all of the wealth from the lower and middle classes by inflating the currency and decreasing the purchasing power, they're then able to take the money that they've generated from the US dollar and then position it into certain assets that are going to spike after the currency crisis. So they're literally manipulating the currency systems. They're manipulating gold, silver, rice, you know, we talk about just check this shit out, guys. It's crazy.
Money and some really big news just happened. For the first time ever, one Bitcoin exceeded the value of 1 ounce of gold. So one Bitcoin can purchase you more stuff than an ounce of gold. And the reason this is really big news for everyone, you know, when I used to report on stuff like this, I would say this is big news for the Bitcoin community, or this is big news for the cryptocurrency community. But the reason that this is really big news for everyone on the planet is because cryptocurrencies have proven to have some staying power here, and it's looking more and more as though cryptocurrencies are the future of money. Now, the only things that have proven to be money over the past 5,000 years are gold and silver, but 99.999% of the population of this planet mistakenly calls the stuff, the pieces of paper in their pocket, money. Those are fiat currencies. They are currency and not money. They are designed to lose purchasing power. For more information on that, please see episode 4 of Hidden Secrets of Money. Currency has to be a medium of exchange, a unit of account. It's got to be portable, durable, divisible, and something called fungible. If I loan you a $20 bill, you can pay me back a 10, a 5, and 5 ones. That interchangeability is fungibility. Money has to be all of those things plus a store of value. Currencies have to lose value over any long periods of time by their very design. They have to inflate the currency supply continuously, and as they inflate the currency supply, the symptom of the monetary inflation is rising prices, a loss in purchasing power of the fiat currency unit. Cryptocurrencies, such as Bitcoin, can be limited in quantity by their very design, just as nature limits the quantity of gold and silver. And thus, cryptocurrencies might maintain their purchasing power. This is a chart of Bitcoin going back to 2011. It was developed earlier than that. And Bitcoin started at pennies and rose, and it hit about $250 and then pulled back to about $60 or $70 here, and then rose to $1,150 and pulled back to about $160 here. And then today, it is up at $1,254 was the close. The high was $1,261. And so what we're seeing here, today the price of gold, yesterday it was at $1,250. Today it's at about $1,240. And so we're seeing Bitcoin at $1,255 and gold at $1,240. This is really huge news. It speaks well of the future of cryptocurrencies, and it's another step in the evolution of money. Cryptocurrencies are going to affect the lives of everyone on this planet.
All right, Wisdom. That video was published on March 2nd, 2017. So that was 2 months ago.
And currently, the Bitcoin price is $2,036.79. Just in that 2 months or so, yes, it's raised about $700. So
actually, so the price of gold. Wait, what? So it's Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So the price of gold was, when he said this, it was there's a base 1,200, and now it's at that's over $800. It's like $840.
So you could buy a little more than 1.5 gold ounces per Bitcoin.
Per Bitcoin. Okay. So this is the core of, like, I mean, of course, along with Colin being my best friend and one of the most beautiful human beings on this planet inside and out, this is one of the main reasons why I brought him on the show today, is because, you know, he has shared with me that he, you know, actually invested into Bitcoin when it first came out, you know, around 2013, 14. That was like when you first.
More like 2011 and 12.
Was it when it, like, okay, yeah, cool.
No, and it wasn't, and at that time I was not investing. I was just using it as a kind of a trading.
Right, tool. Like a trading platform.
I didn't even think about it as a trading, like as an investment. It was more just like, oh, I need this to use online sites.
Right, right. And that's really interesting. Like, if you notice, Amazon will take Bitcoin. And Colin just shared with me this morning that Microsoft opened up the platform to purchase anything on their website with Bitcoin.
So the way that Bitcoin started,
yeah,
was,
let's hear this.
The creator made the code for it, and then he bought a pizza and exchanged 10,000 Bitcoin for a pizza. And that was the first transaction of Bitcoin.
And that was the creator of Bitcoin that did that.
Yeah.
So how, do you know how that even came to bloom? Like how that even came about? Like it was a guy that created this code that was outside of central central banking. And he intended to create a currency that couldn't be regulated by central bank. Is that kind of the idea?
Not couldn't be. And actually, that's interesting because they're trying to make it so that Bitcoin can have an ETF.
Wow.
Which is
going public.
Going public.
Right.
And there's a couple benefits to that, which is basically that it can move money around the world quickly with relative anonymity. Wow. Without the need for central authority, such as a bank or government.
Wow.
But then there's a downside, which it's volatile. 7 times greater than gold, and 8 times greater than S&P 500, and 18 times greater than the U.S. dollar. So it's really volatile.
Wow.
Which means it jumps up and down really fast.
Right, right. And on those graphs, I know you guys couldn't see it because you're listening to us, but on the graphs from the video that we just watched by Mike Maloney, Bitcoin meets the gold price is the future of money? They had a graph which showed Bitcoin, and it spiked up, and then it would drop down, then it would spike even higher, and then it would drop down. So that's the volatility that you're talking about.
Yeah, no. For example, the last 5 days, let's see, on 5/17, Ethereum, which is a different kind of cryptocurrency similar to Bitcoin, but I think a little more reliable.
Nice.
517, 8655. 518, 9175.
Oh my gosh.
And today, 140.22.
Wow.
That's $53.67, or about 62% in the 5 days.
That's crazy.
So we're kind of seeing this, all this hype coming from this cryptocurrency that a lot of people know absolutely nothing about.
Right.
And I mean, there is a lot of benefits to it, but we're gonna see, like, if basically that Ethereum and Bitcoin are in the running to go public.
Right.
Which, if it happens, could hike up the price, like, substantially. It's but if it doesn't happen, it could make the price drop also substantially. It's kind of like, it's kind of like making it, it's on the line right now.
Right, right. And you're kind of, it's a bet.
It's a bet.
It's a bet.
It's gambling. It's
it is.
It's like Forex.
Right.
The currency trading.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. It really is gambling. So is that like a pretty much like a set thing that if it does not go public, then it will drop?
Nothing is set.
Nothing is set. Of
it
course.
Could. It's already doing so well without it.
Right.
You don't. But it is a factor. For example, right. Just the United shindigs, the airline, the guy getting pulled off the plane.
Right.
They lost like $50 million to $100 million. I don't know the exact number, but they lost so much money on just their stock alone because of that shindig. You know, things can happen like that that affect the value of companies. Even
Absolutely.
Though this isn't a company, it's more of like the dollar bill.
Right. So this then leads me to my next question. Which would be, drum roll, if and most likely when our currency inflates to such a point to where the people lose faith.
Like Venezuela.
Exactly.
Venezuela.
Exactly. Like
people are bringing like trash bags of money just to buy bread.
Yes, exactly. And Argentina, we had, okay. So the Argentinian.
Wait, am I thinking of Argentina or am I thinking of Venezuela?
It happened both places.
Okay.
Yeah. There's so the Argentinian peso in 2008 was at a 1-to-1 parity with the U.S. dollar. Literally, essentially overnight, there was a central banking policy decision which put a rationing of bank withdrawals on the Argentinian, on the citizens of Argentina. So. What this means is the purchasing power, okay, rationing of bank withdrawals means that the central banks only allow you a certain dollar amount that you can pull out of your bank account on a daily basis. So I believe Argentina's was it's like $64, $67 a day. So you could only pull out $67 a day from your bank account. Now imagine you have your life savings in your bank account and there's lines around the corner, people are trying to get food, just madness and craziness. Okay, so literally overnight, well, essentially overnight, it went from a 1-to-1 parity with the US dollar to a 1-to-4 or 4-to-1 parity with the US dollar, meaning that if you had $100,000 in your bank account and this central banking policy decision was made and implemented, your $100,000 is now worth $25,000 because it just lost literally 400%.
Is that based on a global scale or is it based on a parity to U.S. to Venezuela or Argentina?
Exactly. It is based on a parity scale. So it's based on because the USD is the standard currency.
So what if I was trading the Argentinian dollar to euros, for example? Would it still be the same thing or was it? Yeah.
So the Argent, exactly. Great question. The Argentinian dollar would be equivalent to 1/4 of what a US dollar would be.
Wow.
And then that would just translate to whatever currency you're trading it in.
Right? Yeah, 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 of course.
So it's just crazy. And in this book that I read, which explained all this information, the gentleman that actually had this experience who went to Argentina in 2008 just to study the currency crisis, he said that, although I was still enjoying my fair share of filet mignon and, you know, golf and like...
Hookers.
Of course. Oh, goodness. He said, as I was enjoying this with my U.S. dollars, because literally, he goes, as I was there, my money was four times as
valuable,
more valuable than theirs. He goes, I was living the good life. He goes, but it was really hard for me to see these people. He goes, I got talking with this one guy on the street who was asking for money. And he said he used to be a banker. He used to be like an investment banker. And, you know, he has like three kids and a wife. And he's like, now, he goes, I'm broke. You know, I don't have any money. So my question for you, Colin, looping back around, is what do you think, with your understanding of cryptocurrency, with your understanding of inflation, with your understanding of quantitative easing, which is the government printing mass currency and injecting it into the economy with the hopes of stimulating jobs and, you know, giving the big corporations the money that they need to hire more people and continue consumerism, whatever. If we have a currency crisis and the dollar collapses, if our government puts a central banking, a rationing withdrawals, do you think that you would rather be positioned asset-wise in cryptocurrency or precious metals? Now, quick, we have had over 5,000 fiat currencies in the last 2,000 years. Each and every single one of those 5,000 fiat currencies failed, and they failed in these seven stages of empire. Once they hit these seven stages and it starts with sound money, and then they start printing money, and then they start inflating, and then they start debasing the currency to fund public works, and then they build a war, and then they put that war to use, and then expenditures explode, and then they have gnarly inflation, and then the purchasing power drop. So every single time, these 5,000 currency systems over the last 2,000 years, every single time have reverted back to gold and silver. So there's been a currency reset by all of the purchasing power from the asset class of the fiat currency transferring to precious metals, being gold and silver. So if precious metal, if an ounce of gold was worth $1,000 before the currency crisis, after the currency crisis, an ounce of gold is going to account for all of that money that was created out of thin air, and now it's going to be worth something like $20,000. So that's the idea of gold. It's happened 5,000 times in the last 2,000 years, but this is also the first time in our history where we've ever had a currency crisis with the internet. Of course, in the year 2000, we had the Y2K bubble, which was the internet crisis. And then 2008, we had the housing bubble, which was people doing stated loans and foreclosing on their properties and not being able to pay their mortgages. So then that was a huge housing bubble. And then the idea, which we're still recovering from, people think that we're fully recovered, we're absolutely not. The idea here is that 2017, we're going to have a what's called a currency crisis, or a the dollar bubble. Colin, with okay. that. Yeah.
Yeah, so the reason that we reverted to gold and silver so many times is because gold and silver was the only thing that you could tangibly hold that had value,
right?
Besides water and food,
absolutely.
But nowadays, with the internet, we and what cryptocurrency is backed by information and computing power, which is going to be the future of humanity. We need to increase our computing power, and it can't only be on these giant warehouses filled with like hard drives and everything running
right.
so much power.
Like servers, like
the
Google
reason
servers
the cryptocurrencies are so valuable is because of mining. Mining is basically the act of donating either CPU, GPU, which is central processing or general processing units, basically your computing power to the currency.
Wow.
But then there's also other codes that are like doing your storage, like terabytes of space, whatever.
Right.
There's different cryptocurrencies based on different kinds of donating information or donating the ability to, I don't know, run something.
Right. So it's like, and then when you say mining.
Mining is basically just like if you ever torrented anything, if you've ever downloaded music, you seed, which is basically right. you help with the bandwidth so that right. some central unit doesn't need to be running everybody.
Right.
Yeah, so mining is essentially seeding, but for money.
That's amazing. I had a
it could be farming too. That's another keyword.
And is that the same thing? Just different word?
Farming, I believe, is generally like a cloud, like you do it through your web browser.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Super crazy. Yeah, I would never have thought that we would be having a conversation about our currency system being crypto-based, you know, being electronically based. I had a really phenomenal conversation with actually a dear friend of ours, as a gentleman. He is a business owner, and he actually is a billionaire. He's on the verge of being a billionaire. Our brother's father. And I had a conversation with him maybe 6 months ago or so about specifically this, because I do have a passion for currency, and I do have a passion for understanding the currency. And what he said, because I said, you know, I've been investing, and I personally thought, I was like, you know, precious metals, that's a safe place to be. I'm going to position myself there just in case there were to be something that were to happen with our currency system. And what he said was, it's all well and good. He goes, but our currency is evolving. He said, I see where your head's at, obviously, with wanting to back the currency by something of intrinsic value. But then he said, what if our currency, instead of how much gold do you have, it's how much bandwidth do you have, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that he was sharing with me, and it totally warped my understanding.
That's what mining rigs do, is they contribute bandwidth to an idea or a cryptocurrency so that a central unit doesn't have to do it.
That's amazing. So you're saying that in a potential currency crisis, you would prefer to be positioned in a cryptocurrency?
It depends on my living situation. Like, for example, if I have security around my house, if I live in a nice area where the crime rate is down,
right?
I don't know. I think I would be 50-50 just because, like, having a physical thing can always be stolen.
Very
like,
true.
Like, having gold can always... You have a treasure chest that can be taken from you.
Right.
No one's going to be... You can't... Unless you insure it, there's no way to, like, get that money back.
So true.
Cryptocurrency, no one can steal it from you without leaving some kind of trace. Not right. saying there has to... A lot of people get Bitcoin stolen in... by being stupid with their information.
Interesting.
With their identity. Or having their phone taken from them or something like that. So there is, like, downsides to both, I guess. But the one upside to cryptocurrency is I could trade it to... If I want to move to Canada, I could trade it to Canadian dollars really easily. Whereas, not that I can't do it with gold, but taking, like, several pounds of gold onto a plane is a little more dangerous. And I don't know if they'll let you do it. Like, right. I feel like you can only take like 10 grand on a plane or something.
There absolutely is a limit to how much...
And getting it shipped, you're just like, no way I'm shipping my gold.
No way.
Someone could take it really easily.
It's so true, bro.
So it's about security nowadays, really, and security in what you think your dollar is worth, security in your actual physical, what you hold.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have cryptocurrencies, we have physical precious metals. Both are, I would say, precious metals are like a safer...
More stable, yeah.
Stable?
Especially since a lot of precious metals are being used in computer chips, the value is raising steadily.
Interesting. I heard about that, because there's commercial use.
Yeah, platinum, gold... copper, they're all conduits for electricity.
Right. And isn't like a piece of gold, isn't there like a small piece of gold in every single cell phone? It's either gold or silver. It's like one of the
yeah,
two.
Yeah, something. I don't know exactly. But
right.
in different chips, they use different kinds of metals for different reasons.
Totally.
And you can store information on metal too.
How,
You can make computer. I don't know exactly, so I'm not going to
say. Like, how do you do that, Colin? That's really, really crazy. That's really, really interesting. Okay, so then let's even bring this in with the 5 minutes that we have left. Let's even bring this into the idea. Real estate. So what do you think is going to happen with real estate if we were to have a currency crisis?
I think it's, I mean, we are having a currency crisis.
We pretty much are.
So they're trying to make the cost of living go up.
Yes.
And with that, the rent goes up, the taxes goes up. And so our real estate is kind of being, it's intangible almost.
Right.
And we're going to have to turn into like, we're going to have to turn it into groups or something where like 10 people buy a house. Right. They can live in that house, but it's 10 people grouped together and they have that as they trust those people.
Right.
And that's where they live.
It's like a tribe almost.
Yeah. Like a trust.
Yeah. I dig that.
A apartment tribe or something. I don't know. That's just an idea. But honestly, it'll make it so that people have to move out of the city, or that the cities will expand so that people live farther from a city where their job is. It'll make people have to travel more. But, and I think it'll also make rural living, there'll be more, since people are working on the internet now,
right,
people will be able to live farther from a city.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. But especially in today's age, majority of jobs, I don't want to say majority, but a good portion of jobs are internet-based, are online-based. People are working from their homes. You know?
Yeah, but then there's also the side of it where robots are going to take over a lot of our jobs.
So true. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
We already have artificial intelligence. It just hasn't been commercially released.
No one's going to work in retail. No one's going to be able to work in manufacturing. There's going to be like one manager overlooking an entire car factory instead of people actually helping the robots. There's going to be nobody working at fast food joints, nobody working at retail shops. Everything's going to be like, it's all those kinds of jobs, all those service jobs are all going to go away.
Right.
And it's kind of
crazy. Oh my gosh. So yeah, sorry, go on.
No, you're good.
So when all of these service jobs go away and it's replaced with AI technology, or at least doesn't even need to be AI, just a computer that can respond to whatever task it's being asked, how is that going to affect the way people receive money? You know, like, so literally people are going to have to get into a whole new industry. They're going to have to find, you know, because there's people that have been in retail for their entire lives, you know, like a store manager. But guess what? We don't need you anymore. Like,
that's why I'm getting into cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity.
Everybody needs to be secure on the internet. Every company, every person. So,
yeah, wow.
That's my path right now.
Colin, you're so wise, bro. Eh, really.
I'm getting there.
Nah, you don't give yourself enough credit, man. You're super, super wise. I really appreciate you like sharing your profound wisdom when it comes to this stuff.
We'll talk about this again.
We will. Oh, we absolutely will. And
we'll bring some better and more updated information for you guys.
We definitely will. We definitely will. I'm really actually, I've always wanted to have a show that was based on literally what we're talking about today. I've always had a passion for understanding monetary history. I've always had a passion for understanding how to position ourselves in on the receiving end of the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind, which we're about to experience. Colin, is there anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Nah, I love you guys. Have a great day and smile.
Yes!
Smile for me.
Smile for Colin. All the unconditional love, light, happiness, abundance, luxury, prosperity, information, education, joy, love, light, laughter from our hearts to yours. I am your host, Davey, my brother, co-host, always, whether he's with me in spirit, whether he's on the show speaking through me or here in the physical, he will always be a
co-host. Peace out, everyone.
Here on the Vibration Station. Love you guys so much. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. That's at Good Vibes Station. And you can also check out our sister account on Instagram. That's at universalconsciousness.1111. Thank you guys so much. Love you with all of our hearts. And feel free to email me at davesvibrationstation@gmail.com for any questions or comments. Once again, all the unconditional love, light, happiness, abundance, joy, and laughter from our hearts to yours. Have a beautiful, blessed Sunday. Have an amazing week. And we will see you next Sunday. Love you guys. Peace.